Going Linux, Episode 37, Computer America, Number 4. Welcome to the Going Linux Podcast. I'm your host, Larry Bushy.
And I'm your co-host, Tom.
Going Linux is designed to provide you with practical, day-to-day advice on how to use Linux and Linux applications to get things done.
If you're new to Linux, moving to Linux, or just thinking about going Linux, then this podcast is for you.
Currently, we publish 3 episodes a month. In our user experience episodes, we take 2 months to cover a topic. During the first month, we introduce the topic for new Linux users and recent converts. During month 2, we discuss the same topic from a more advanced perspective for users of Linux building their confidence and competence with the operating system.
And between user experience episodes, we have listener feedback episodes. In those episodes, we read listener email, play listener-generated audio, and answer listener questions. Finally, following the third Tuesday of each month, we post Larry's appearances on the Computer America show, minus the commercials.
This is my 4th appearance on the Computer America talk show from July 15th. 2008.
Computer America, hosted by national columnist Craig Crossman. Look for Craig's weekly column in your favorite newspaper. This show is being beamed nationwide by the Business Talk Radio Network, the Lifestyle Talk Radio Network, and on the internet at computeramerica.com. Keep it here for technology news, computer products, guest interviews, and your phone calls. You're listening to Computer America.
Hello and welcome into the Computer America Show. It's the nation's longest-running, nationally syndicated radio talk show on computers. It's Tuesday, the 15th of July, 2008, and I'm your host, Craig Crossman.
I'm your co-host, Carrie Holzman.
And it is the third Tuesday of the month, and that means it is time for our All Linux Show. That's right, ladies and gentlemen. We dedicate the third Tuesday of every month to the topic of Linux. It is a very important operating system. So many of you out there are using it. Are considering using it. Some of you using it, and a lot of you are confused. And whichever category you fall into, that's why we dedicate the show to the topic of Linux. And to assist us in this endeavor is our Linux expert, Larry Bushy. He is the creator and host of the Going Linux podcast. Hey, Larry, welcome back into Computer America.
Thank you very much.
You had to think about that, huh?
Well, I wasn't sure. After the past 2 times when I first spoken up, my voice hadn't come across, so I was a little hesitant, but now we're on the line and we're ready to go.
Yeah. good. Maybe it's a Linux problem. You know,
could be. Oh, come on now, guys.
Hey, now. Actually, we do have a Linux problem. Let's just dive right into it, if you don't mind. There's a listen. One of our regular listeners has written in and said that they're using Linux. They're having problems getting into our Computer America chat room. It's a brand new hard drive install of Ubuntu 8.04. It's a dedicated machine. There's no virtual software. It's an Intel processor. Basically, on day 4 of Linux, and they want to use Linux exclusively for 4 weeks. It's a personal challenge experiment. And upon entering the Computer America chat room for the first time, they were asked to install Java. So what they did is they went to the JCW web browser plugin. GCJ.
Yeah, GCJ, right, exactly.
I don't know where the W came from. GCJ web browser plugin. Then they did the Java SE6 plugin, the Java SE5 plugin, GCJ using OpenJDK, the Java Development Kit, restarted. She said that's a Windows habit. The above steps allowed me to get to the loading screen for the chat with the loading GUI and activity bar, but it just continues to load. It never finishes. Also tried terminal commands like sudo, sudo, apt-get install sun java 5 JDK, and sudo apt-get install sun java 6 JRE, sun java 6 plugin, sun java 6 fonts. No changes, same result. Do you have any advice on what she could do to make this work?
Yes. It sounds to me like...
Can I take a guess? Can I take a guess? because I'm not a Linux expert, but I've seen something like this happen. And again, this is just a shot in the dark, Larry. Really, because,
okay, shoot away.
Let me get out of the room so I can get hit.
Because I've seen that loading. That you're talking about the loading thermometer bar that scrolls across as it's activating the Java applet in there. And I've seen that in some browsers. The browser itself has been the fault, not the Java. In other words, when, for example, at the time it was with Firefox, the Safari browser didn't know how to handle it properly, and it would just continue to load, nothing happened. But if you tried a different browser, all the other browsers like IE worked, and Firefox worked, but it was just that one particular browser. It turned out it was a browser problem rather than a Java problem. That was how it implemented itself. Again, it's a shot in the dark. It's a similar symptom, but it could be a totally different problem.
Yeah, I've seen that symptom myself, and although it can be a browser-specific problem, in this case, it's probably not. Depending on whether or not the browser's been updated to Firefox version 3.0, Ubuntu, the latest version of Ubuntu, when it first was released with a release candidate of Firefox. And as a result, it may or may not have installed the plugins correctly. So first thing to do is to make sure you have the latest version of Firefox. Just go to Help and About, and it should say 3.0. And if that's the case, then we can take it from there. If not, then you should run the updater for Linux software. It'll download the update, and then you'll be able to check the rest of the setup. I have run across this problem myself with Firefox, and usually it's caused by the Java applet not being installed properly or the wrong Java applet being installed. What I've noticed with add-on chat is that it wants to have the Sun version of Java, not the open source version. So what you'll need to do for your listener, for your the person who's trying to make a good go of using Linux, is to go into the Synaptic Package Manager and look for all those packages that have been installed that say Java in them. And in the search for installed applications, you can put a search term in there. Just search for Java and uninstall everything that is Java. And then what you want to install are these packages. I'm just going to list them. And there are 2, 4, 6, 8. You want to install java-common, sun-java5-bin, B-I-N, and then sun-java5-jre, sun-java5-plugin, sun-java6-plugin, sun-java6-jre, sun-java6-plugin, and tzdata-java. That last one is a time zone adjuster for Java.
What is it again? What's that last one?
That last one is TZ as in time zone, data, D-A-T-A, dash, Java. So with those installed, then just restart Firefox and everything should work in the add-on chat. It works for me, and if that doesn't work, we can dig into it a little bit further, but it should.
Okay, now Carrie is notating everything you said and is passing this along to our listener who wrote this. So we'll be hopefully be. But so wait a minute. So my shot in the dark sounds like it might have hit something because
I agree.
It might be because as you said, edition of Ubuntu came with the earlier version of Firefox, and I remember the earlier version did not work with the add-on chat. You needed the second Firefox 2,
right?
And it was very, and of course now we have Firefox 3, and it's fully compatible. So I might have hit something with that shot in the dark.
Yeah, absolutely. Computers are computers regardless of what the operating system is.
And you know what's even funny is the internet's supposed to be the great equalizer. You know, talk about – so the internet is not, unfortunately, but, you know, you like to think that we're shooting toward that and, you know, that no matter what computer you're using, the internet's the things on the internet's going to work with it, you know?
Yep.
That was the intent. As you know, that doesn't seem to be the case. But, you know, they're still working towards that anyway.
Right. And
sorry,
Java,
this website will only work with IE, you know, 6. Wait a minute, you know, this was the great equalizer. And it'll work with IE, but not on a Mac, you know. It'll only work with Windows. You know, come on, you know, or it doesn't work with Linux. Come on, what are you doing here, you know? So I think that's why ActiveX sites are kind of going away.
The Synaptic Package Manager, what is that that you mentioned?
A package manager, first of all, let's start with a definition. A package manager is a software application that is used in Linux to look for software that's available for that distribution. That software is available in what's called repositories or sources of software. And so the package manager connects to that repository online, searches for what you're looking for, offers to install it. When it's installing it, it looks to see if there are any other packages or software packages that it depends on, and installs those as well. So Synaptic is S, and now you've got me, S-Y-N-A-P-T-I-C, Synaptic. And that is the package manager that comes with Ubuntu or other Debian-based distributions of Linux. There are other package managers out there as well.
Okay, I was a little confused by that. So it's not, you're not actually going into Firefox and making these changes.
No, in fact, this is one of the big bugaboos about Java is that Sun originally had it as a proprietary application or a proprietary utility, and
right.
As a result, the open source community tried its best to create some open source compatible versions of it and were largely successful, but there are a few sites or a few applications, and it would seem that Add-on Chat is one of those that are specifically designed around the Java implementation of the Sun implementation of
right.
Java and require it. So what your listener has done is installed just about everything she could see in the repositories that related to Java, and as a result,
right.
probably has a couple of different applications conflicting with one another, and that's why I recommended that she uninstall everything and start over with just those ones that I know work.
Okay, so I've stressed that. I've been typing a message there.
Mm-hmm.
And she's working on that now as we speak. So hopefully we'll see her in the chat
room. We'll see her in the chat room, yes.
If it works.
Now Add-on Chat actually is one of the chat room that we kind of decided upon using. We've been using it actually for a number of years now. We really do like it. Whether they're an advertiser with us or not, the point is we use it and we continue to use it. It allows so many people to participate in the chat room, and it's been one of the best ones that we've found to date. And as you can see, it does work with Linux. It works with Windows.
Is the hang-up with Linux, I think, that this goes to why I don't use Linux. I mean, it's these little tiny problems that seem minor. They're easily fixed in Windows, but that lack of experience in Linux to know what to do. If you're trying to run a business and you're trying to save money by going to this free operating system, there's this learning curve that you can't get around it. And
Larry, what's your comment to a statement like that?
Well, I have to take a little bit of issue with that.
Okay. Go for it. I sensed it.
I'm not going to get on a soapbox here. However,
you can share mine.
Yeah, okay, very good. Just shove over a little bit.
Sure.
So. And I think I'm going to have to save this comment for after the break.
Yeah, boy, I timed that one well, didn't I?
Yes, you did. This is the Computer America Show and the Business Talk Radio Network and the Lifestyle Talk Radio Network. Don't worry, Larry, you have 2 hours to respond.
I'll get my response in.
Yes, you will. Of course. This is the Computer America Show. It's all Linux tonight, both hours. We'll be right back with lots more excitement here on the Computer America Show.
Computer America is the longest-running national radio show on computers. Check it out at computeramerica.com. Computer America airs every weeknight from 10 to midnight Eastern Time on the Business Talk Radio Network.
This is the Computer America Show. 26 minutes after the hour is the time. And also, Carrie, that Centrino 2 announcement was embargoed until today. Intel is just making that announcement that they are getting ready to launch Centrino 2. Cool, huh? We are – Carrie, you there? Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, okay. I didn't hear a response. Yeah.
My microphone was off.
Oh, there you go. So so you heard it here first, folks. You know, Centrino 2 technology just being launched by announced by Intel today. If you missed it, you can hear it again tomorrow night as we play Intel mission again. Yes?
Before the break.
Yes.
I was just explaining
the burning question.
The lost productivity in having to relearn. Is what I think keeps Linux out of people's homes and businesses. And you, Larry, were about to counterpoint that.
Yes. Far be it from me to argue with you. However,
it's not an argument. We want to display to our audience both sides of a coin.
Yes, we want to discuss this point. There are a number of things that can be, as you said, easily resolved, a number of issues with setting up Linux. And there are a number of users out there who are in the same boat with Windows. Not everyone is as well versed with Windows as they are with, operating a toaster, for example. And as a result, if there's an issue comes up with Windows, a lot of Windows users struggle with trying to find the answer to those problems as well. In Linux, there are a number of resources available to you to get that kind of help. Linux isn't the only operating system that has little foibles like this. And although there are a larger number of Windows users out there to help you if you get into problems. There are a large number of resources, including websites, chat rooms like this one that we're on here at Computer America, forums and so on to help resolve these issues.
Guess what? I'm just sorry. I'm just to tell you that the person who was having trouble entering in our chat room, evidently your advice worked, and just appeared in the add-on chat room. There you go.
And she said, "Did you just say easily resolved?"
Well, how bad was it? And I guess I just proved myself, didn't I?
I suppose. Here's the thing: if I was a home user and I had a lot of time on my hands to investigate all the problems. Mm-hmm. It may be very entertaining and a way to spend my time. If I was a business person and I wanted to move to Linux, I would certainly hire a Linux guru that could answer all of our questions and provide us, because I couldn't. I mean, I couldn't put Linux on one of my customers' desktops. I would be fired because I wouldn't be able to answer their questions. I wouldn't be able to help them with any problem, whether it's, trying to get some software to run or trying to accomplish something simple. Now, typical Windows problems that they may have, maybe codecs, someone sends them a video, they don't know what it is, or even sometimes file type problems. And they're file types I've never seen before in my life either, and I can hit Google and find the answer. But because that's where my background is in Windows. So I guess that's the point I'm trying to make.
Yeah, and that's a very good point, is the fact that the number of experts that are out there to provide advice to businesses in particular are mostly Windows experts. And as a result, it's easier to resolve a Windows problem because there are more experts out there in a business environment. And if you do want to switch to Windows, if you do want to switch from Windows to Linux in a business environment, you need to have someone on staff who knows Linux. That goes for if you want to switch to Mac as well. If you're an all Windows shop and you want to switch to Mac,
and you don't have anyone who understands the Mac, you're going to have problems as well. Another thing that Linux gives you in the way of flexibility is dedicated distributions that have all these resolved these issues resolved up front.
Well, there you go.
We'll talk about more of that when we return, what that means.
Yeah.
Yes. All right, this is the Computer America Show on the Business Talk Radio Network and the Lifestyle Talk Radio Network. You've tuned into our All Linux show. Larry Bushy joins us. We'll continue on with them right after these messages. Don't go anywhere. Stay with us. Radio Network and the Lifestyle Talk Radio Network. I don't think we even get up the phone numbers. We should do that. Toll free, 866-606-TALK, 866-606-8255. That number will get you on and get you through. Send us an email like our last Linux user did at live, L-I-V-E, at computeramerica.com if you can't get into the chat room or if you just don't want to go on the air. That's a great way to communicate with us. Or you can also, as I said, join us in the chat room if you can get into it, which I'm sure you can, because actually it works with Linux and it works with Vista and works with Mac and Windows. It's really easy. And to do that, just go to the homepage of computeramerica.com, click on the thing that says chat with us, put in a username. That's the name you'll be known by when you enter into the chat room, and your Java-enabled browser will get you in there. Right now, it is All Linux tonight. Larry Bushy is the creator and host of the Going Linux podcast, and he is with us tonight to answer your questions and help you out if you have a Linux problem or a Linux question. It's real simple to do that. Just give us a call, and we'll get you the answer.
So before the break, Larry, you were talking about having distributions that already have the problems resolved. What did you mean by that? What is?
You make
an image?
No, what I really meant by that is you can search out a distribution that has that's been configured for what you want to do. For example, if you know you're going to be wanting to play MP3 files and other proprietary media formats, you probably want to look at a distribution like Linux Mint, which is based on Ubuntu, and it is pre-installed with all of the codecs and drivers that you might need to play the proprietary formats. Now, those Linux users who are absolute purists as far as free and open source, free from the perspective of free as in speech, they would take issue with that because they don't like to have the proprietary formats on there. But for those of us who are a little more practical about things, we realize that, yes, there are things out there like MP3 files, and, yes, we would like to be able to play them on our Linux machines. So Linux Mint is pre-configured for people who want to use media, not only for those people who want to create media in a podcast like I have on the Going Linux podcast, but even just for people who want to play CDs and other media types that would require the additional codecs that don't come pre-installed on a distribution like Slackware or like Mandriva or even Ubuntu, for that matter.
But how would you know that? I mean, how would you know one distribution from the other?
You have to do your homework. You really do. And even though you may decide that you want to purchase a computer with Linux already installed on it, and more than likely you'll end up with Ubuntu, you can add in those things. Just like we added in the correct Java application for your listener. You do need to do a little bit of research. You do need to spend a little bit of time looking at what it is you're getting into. That's for sure. Linux in general is not for the person who doesn't like tinkering around with their computer. However, there are distributions like Linux Mint, and there are others out there, that make a valiant effort to try to pre-configure for folks who would want to use it for everyday use.
And that was a great example, by the way, that, you know, we started the show off with a question. We're not even halfway through the show, and the listener applied what you said and was in the chat room within 15 minutes after we discussed it, live right on the radio.
Yes.
Unrehearsed, unplanned. You didn't even know we were going to ask that question.
No, you saw it right on me.
Something to be said about knowing what you're doing, regardless of the operating system, and that plays a lot into it. Tell you what, we're going to take a break, just a quick 60-second one. If you have a question about Linux, call us toll-free, 866-606-TALK. We'll back in 1 minute. Welcome back into the Computer America Show. We are live on the Business and Lifestyle Talk Radio Networks, where this is our third Tuesday of the month. It's all Linux all day. That's what we're doing tonight. It's a Linux edition of Computer America, as we do each and every third Tuesday of the month. Joining us is Larry Bushy of the Going Linux podcast. Now, the Going Linux podcast is
what?
What episode are you on?
We're up to episode 36.
36?
36. We have three episodes a month.
Okay.
One of which
that's what
is
I was
the
getting
rebroadcast
at.
of the Computer America recording.
Ah. Excellent.
Yes, so one of those three. And on the other two episodes in a month, we have a listener feedback episode where we actually answer on the show questions that listeners or readers to the website have sent in by email or through other routes, including comments on the various podcast directories out there. So we collect all of those. We answer as many as we can in the listener feedback episodes. And the third episode a month is a user experience episode in which Tom, my co-host, and I pick a topic that we would like to provide some information to our listeners on. We discuss it the first month in a very high-level view for new people switching to Linux from other operating systems, so for the newbie, if you will. And then the following month, we follow up usually with a more advanced episode where we dig a little bit deeper for those listeners from the previous month who have dug a little deeper themselves and now know enough to be dangerous, or for those listeners who have been using Linux for a little while and would like to build a little more confidence with using Linux as their operating system day to day.
Now, on tonight's show, I don't know if there was anything specific you had in mind that you wanted to discuss either for potential Linux users or current Linux users. It's certainly your forum if you want to do that. Or if you have listener questions that have been written into your show that you want to bring up and answer on our show, you're welcome to do that. So you can see how well we rehearsed this and planned this ahead. I was just curious what direction you'd like to take this tonight.
Well, I'd like to take a fork and take both directions if I can.
Okay,
I have some listener email that I can read off. But before we do that, I'd like to take a little stab at how people can get into Linux. And we've actually started down that road. When you first install Linux onto a computer, you sometimes haven't chosen the right one, the right distribution for you. And the nice thing about Linux is you can install it and decide this one's not for me and try a different distribution because it's free. The only cost is your download costs, if any, and the time it takes to experiment around with it. But many people will want to actually purchase a computer with Linux pre-installed, much like they purchase Windows computers. That's the way most people get Windows. They don't install it themselves. They buy a computer and it already has Windows on it, quote, for free. Well, of course, it's already included in the price of the computer. But you can also purchase computers that have Linux pre-installed. Dell sells them. Emperor Linux is a distributor that sells them as well. There are a number of other ones out there, and I can provide a list of those for your show notes if you like. We have a list of them on our website as well. Yeah. Maybe you can put it in your free software selections.
You know what? There's no reason why we can't. I mean, I think right now it's all Windows stuff, but there's no rule that says it's got to be all Windows.
Yeah, exactly. So, as I said, most people get Windows by buying a computer with it already pre-installed, and certainly that's an option as well.
Yeah.
One of the things that you mentioned earlier is about the little troubles that you might have in setting up Linux for the very first time. Well, let me ask you, Kerry, I guess you're the PC expert here and the Windows expert. If you were to install Windows from scratch, now I'm not talking about restoring it from a partition that the vendor may have had, how long do you think that would take you? You probably haven't done that in a long time, but
No, I do that. I do that all the time.
Okay, great.
I mean, it's not a fix generally, but on a new PC build, let's say a customer's buying a new computer from me, I don't restore images. One of the ways I test or burn in the computers by making sure Windows installs without a problem. So you've got the actual install disk. Now, I've got a special install disk that pre-installs many of the drivers for me. But I would say after you install Windows, but because I have that special install disk, the install takes a little longer because it's got to search through a lot more drivers. But it also means I can walk away from it and I don't have to sit there and press F6 to put a boot floppy a SATA floppy in for the... So by doing that, even just that alone and installing Windows, you're not done because you still have to install the individual drivers. Usually the motherboard will come with a disk that has the chipset drivers, the audio drivers, the network card drivers, video card drivers, if it's got built-in video. If it doesn't have built-in video, the video card will have its own CD. Each one of these wants a reboot. That's painful. You install it, you reboot. You wait for it to reboot. Wait for the disk to load again. Wait to see what your options are. Select the next one. Reboot. Some have a button you can click that says install all the drivers, and it will reboot automatically on its own. But, you know, you can go have a cup of coffee. It's going to take a good 20 minutes for that to from start to finish.
Yep.
And then when that's done, you have to visit Windows Update and get all your updates. And then when that's done, I install the free Adobe Reader. I install the free Java. I install the free AVG antivirus. And I make a couple of tweaks to turning down system restore space so it doesn't eat up the whole hard drive, turning down Internet Explorer space so it doesn't eat up all of the hard drive, a couple of optimizations, reset the swap file to a system managed size. All in all, I would say 2 hours, 2.5 hours from start to finish.
And
that's a full complete, you know, that's everything but any applications. That's not including... You know, any applications like Microsoft Office or any of the updates that it requires after you install it, or any printers or scanners, because I can't install those without having them.
Yes, yes. Okay, and have you gotten all the Windows updates at that point?
Yeah.
Okay. So with that, it probably takes you a little less time than the average user might take.
The average user isn't going to be that thorough.
Well, certainly, but also the average user has to sit there and hit F6, and if they happen to be away from their computer at that time, it's going to take them a little bit longer.
Yeah, and the average user is probably going to read every screen, whereas I know what the screens say before they come up.
Exactly.
So people say, how did you read that? And it's like, well, I already knew what that was going to say. I already had the mouse positioned where I know approximately where the button's going to be, and if you see me, I'm flying through the screens, and it's because I already know what they say because I've done it so many times. I have them pretty much memorized.
So would it be fair to say that best case, a couple of hours to get Windows installed to the point where you have it up, functional, updated, and antivirus and maybe a couple of other utilities on there?
Yeah, I'd say 2 to 3 hours. We'll give it the event. We'll say 3 hours.
Okay. Depending on your Linux distribution, you're in the same ballpark. Usually it can take me from the time of inserting an Ubuntu or Kubuntu or even an OpenSUSE CD and booting into that and then installing. It takes me about 2 hours. And the difference is... for the most part, depending on the hardware, it will recognize most of the hardware. I can install the printers without having to have the printers connected. At the end of it, I have a full operating system, but in addition, I have a full Office suite completely updated to the latest version. I have a web browser and all of the other things that go along with that. Games, programming utilities, software programs for creating your own programs, and a full operating system with a lot of applications that come for free with Linux because it's part of that distribution. So comparing apples and apples, if the average user had to install Windows, it would be about the same amount of effort, if not more, than installing Linux for the very first time.
All right. Well,
it's hard to say unless we put somebody that's not me and not you and seen how they interpreted what was being asked of them, how they reacted to it from each operating system. That'd be a fun experiment, though.
New user. Yes, it would.
All right. This is Computer America. We're going to pause. We'll be right back. Lots more coming up. Stay with us. This is the Computer America Show on the Business Talk Radio Network and the Lifestyle Talk Radio Network, 866-606-TALK, the toll-free number. Larry Bushy, creator and host of the Going Linux podcast, joins us for this hour and the next hour because it's the third Tuesday of the month, and we just like him. And also, he happens to know a lot about Linux, and we dedicate the entire show to the topic and subject matter of Linux. So, Carrie, you were in mid-conversation with him before the break.
Yeah, well, just discussing the difference, perhaps, of installing Linux versus Windows, the time it takes. They seem to be pretty equivalent. I'm curious what your take is, Larry, on the psychology, because I'm fascinated by the psychology of it, and that is there seems to be almost a personal pride that people take with Linux and some even with Windows. Some may mistake my argument for Windows as pride in Windows, but it's really that's not what it is for me. That's not my motivation for bringing it up. My motivation for bringing it up is simply that it's what I know, and the only reason it's what I know is because that's what the majority of people use, and that's how I make my living. So if everybody was using Linux or if everybody was using Mac, I'd be saying the exact same things under the same justifications because that's where my experience would be because I have to make a living.
Sure.
And I know there are people out there who do make a living with Linux. There are people out there who do make a living with Mac. But they are also a smaller group of people, just as there are fewer number of people that use those operating systems. But the people who use the operating systems, getting back to my question, seem to take a lot of take it almost personally when you talk negatively about the operating system.
Well, there are a lot of Linux fanatics out there, just like there are a lot of Mac fanatics out there. It does
No.
Yes, just a little. Linux has a little bit of a geek cachet to it, if to mix metaphors there. It started off very much as a geek's operating system, as something that took a hardcore geek to get it running, and you could take pride in the fact that you were a geek if you could get Linux running. Today, all you have to do is put a CD in there, and depending on your hardware, it may just be up and running within a matter of a couple of hours for you.
It was a lot like that was the internet, you know, because before that it was all command line stuff and
or DOS,
all that.
Exactly.
And of course, now it's all graphic, and you know, anybody can go in there and navigate and do it. You know,
there are a lot of parallels between
the
development of the internet, or even the development of Windows, and the development of and adoption of Linux over time. And it has graduated from being an all-geek operating system, and now it is a little more accessible to the average user.
Larry,
can I
ask you a question? But why does it seem to be, and again, I speak because I'm in the trenches and I get this all the time. Everybody knows, okay, the internet, anybody can do it. My kid does it, boom. Windows, anybody can really do it now. You know, my kid does it. But there seems to be this persistent legacy that hangs on with Linux, that it's something that, you know, it's very cryptic in nature and, you know, it's hard to learn. Why does that continue?
Well, because there is that little bit of mystique out there, and there are still Linux distributions out there. If you run across Slackware or something like that, it's going to be a lot geekier and a lot more difficult to get set up.
Mm. All right, well, there he is. So maybe Linux is its own culprit. Sounds like maybe.
Yes, that's true in many ways.
Yeah. All right, we're going to break. We got the local and national news, top of the hour break, and then we'll continue on with another hour with Larry Bushy, the creator and host of the Going Linux podcast. It's All Linux Tonight here on the Computer America Show. Don't go anywhere.
Weeknight, Computer America, hosted by national columnist Craig Crossman. The first hour's behind us, but there's still more of tech news, tech talk, and your phone calls. We're being beamed nationwide by the Business Talk Radio Network, the Lifestyle Talk Radio Network, and on the internet at ComputerAmerica.com. You got computer problems? Bring them on. You're listening to Computer America. Computers run the world, and we run computers. Call us toll-free, 866-606-TALK. That's 866-606-TALK. Or send us an email to live at ComputerAmerica.com.
Hello and welcome into hour two of the nation's longest-running, nationally syndicated radio talk show on computers. This is the Computer America Show, and I'm your host, Craig Crossman.
I'm your co-host, Carrie Holzman.
And we are smack dab in the middle of Linux night, and also we're... It's not even the middle. We're smack dab in the beginning of our huge Computer America CompUSA contest. And we had our first one because we are now the official radio talk show, computer radio talk show of CompUSA. And along with that comes great responsibility, Padawan. It also means that we have a lot of really great contests coming up. We just gave away, a diamond and gold Bluetooth Mogo mouse in our first contest.
Two of them.
Yeah, exactly. Worth $1,000 each. And now we're topping that because we're not giving away one. We're not giving away two. We're giving away three Sony Vaio laptops. That's right. And these are beautiful. They're slick. These are fully loaded. 2 gigabyte of DDR2 memory, a 200 gigabyte hard drive, 15.4 inch wide LCD color screen, Intel Pentium dual core processor running at 1.86 gigahertz. It comes with Microsoft Windows Vista Home Premium. It's loaded, and we have three of them to give away. All you have to do is go to ComputerAmerica.com. Right there on the homepage, you'll see the big vertical banner. Win one of these three Sony laptops. Just click on that. They'll ask you for your full name. That's your first and last name, an email address, a zip code. And they want to verify that you're over 18 years of age. And it is eligible to all of the 50 states. So you have to live in one of the 50 states in the United States. And that's it. And just go ahead and enter. We are going to the contest finishes on the 15th of August, which is a Friday, and then on the following Tuesday, when Carrie and I are back together, Lonnie Paul from CompUSA will join us on the 19th, and we will announce the three winners of these really terrific laptops. So make sure that you are entered to win. Speaking of contests, also I just want to congratulate this week's Buddy List winner, Jack Tyler, who wins the brand new Logitech Wave keyboard and also a copy of PC Tools Internet Security Suite. And that's PC Tools all-in-one security suite featuring their award-winning anti-spyware, antivirus, firewall, and spam protection. And hey, for those of you listening to the show via the podcast or streaming, if we receive a call, email, feedback, or chat room visit from someone who's outside of North America, that person is eligible to receive a copy of PC Tools' latest version of Spyware Doctor, now in its version 6.0. That's very cool. And again, Jack Tyler, just to mention, is one of our chat room regulars. We haven't had a chat room regular win something in a long time, so a big congratulations to Jack there for being this week's Buddy List winner. There you go. All right.
So there's a lot of stuff to give away. I tell you, we've got the three laptops. We've got the Buddy List contest each and every Friday. And while you're filling out the form for the laptops, CompUSA has their own 100 PCs and 100 Days contest. You can enter all of these. You're not restricted to just picking one. You can enter all of them.
There you go. All right. And speaking of no restrictions, that's what you get when you you wind up with the Linux operating system. What a segue! Larry Bushy joins us, continues on with us, the creator and the host of the Going Linux podcast. It's the third Tuesday of the month, and we dedicate that to the subject of Linux, and Larry is our guy when it comes to Linux, and there you go. Hey, Larry. So during the break, how many installations of Linux did you install?
Yeah, not quite long enough to get them installed. Maybe restore them from an image. I could do that in that time.
There you go.
So now we've talked a bit about why somebody might want to install Linux or the...
Sure.
know what to expect if they go to install Linux. What about for our Linux listeners? How about them? What do we have for them? Any listener feedbacks or tips for Linux users?
Yeah, sure. Well, I've actually brought a few emails in, and I really get three kinds of emails. There's the listener who writes in and says, love the show, love Linux, thanks very much. And those ones are nice to read, but they don't provide a lot of help for folks other than for me. At least I know that the show that we do at Going Linux is well-received and is appreciated. So I thank everyone who writes in for those kinds of emails. The second kind is questions. And those people who may be trying Linux for the first time or maybe have Linux installed and are having trouble with something or other, I can't get this to work, or how do I do this? I've never done it before. Those kinds of questions. And the third kind of email that we get is listener suggestions. We actually have folks write in with answers to other people's questions. And one of the questions that we got was, how do I enable the ability to play MP3s? I just installed Ubuntu, and I can't for the life of me figure out how to play MP3s. I start up the media player, and it doesn't do anything. It tells me that I have to install a codec. What the heck is that, and how does that work? Well, we have, for that listener, something called the Ubuntu Restricted Extras. And someone in the chat room was asking about that. And in answer to that question, what is the Ubuntu Restricted Extras? That is something that's available in the Ubuntu repository. So again, you go into the Synaptic Package Manager and you search for you can search for restricted, you can search for extras, you can search on almost any term, even MP3, and it'll find it. The package name is Ubuntu-Restricted-Extras, and there are a few others. What that is a package that installs for you MP3 playback and decoding support. It provides support for other audio formats. It installs something called the GStreamer plugin. GStreamer is a media player application that provides a lot of restricted from the perspective of being proprietary codecs and plugins to enable media playback on Linux. It also installs Microsoft fonts so that when you're creating documents in that word processor that comes with your version of Linux, that you can make it match exactly with what someone in Microsoft Word would see by using the same fonts. So you can send them the document, they can open it in Word, and they wouldn't even know it was created in something other than Word. It installs the Java runtime environment that Citizen X in the chat room was having trouble with in trying to log into the chat. It installs Flash plugin and installs an encoder to be able to create MP3 files, and it also installs DVD playback for your Linux installation. So it's not one software program. It's really a compilation of others that you can install by searching for this one package. It installs it all at once and gets you up and running quickly. So that's an example of the kind of question that we get and the kind of answer that we give.
All right. Well, do you have some more?
Absolutely.
Thank you, sir, but I have some more.
Okay.
That's good stuff. I mean, that's good stuff right there. I keep it coming.
Oh, absolutely. Here's one that we actually received off of Podcast Alley. Podcast Alley is a podcast directory, and it allows you to put sites on there. Put comments on there, rather. And listener Paul put a comment on that says, I'm an over-the-road truck driver and ex-IT guy. Life outside of driving is my family and computers. Your podcast is very informative and well-produced. I am currently starting from the beginning with show number one, and he goes on to talk about the show, but he's saying, my biggest problem right now is not being able to take notes when driving. That is, as he's listening to the podcast, Keep up the good work. I am installing Linux on a second laptop and have, or a little spelling mistake here, and would like to know where to find instructions on getting a Verizon USB 720 cellular modem to work under Linux. At this point, any Linux distribution would be the one that I would choose, as long as I could make my cellular modem work to get the internet while on the road. Many thanks, Paul, the high-tech over-the-road truck driver from Sherman, Texas. Well, this is a situation where we answered the question on the show. Both Tom and I had no experience with this, so we threw it out to our listeners. And we got the episode that this was released under was just last week, and we've already received three different responses from our listeners. The first one is back on Podcast Alley. It says, this might help the trucker that was wanting to use a USB wireless cell dongle. So this USB device that he's talking about here is a cellular modem that plugs in through USB onto a computer, and he needs to know how to use it with Linux. And this particular gentleman has a link to an article that he wrote on how to get this thing up and running. He says, but as I pass my A-plus certification, that's in Linux, I'm looking for a job outside of trucking. So this listener is a trucker himself and wants to get into IT. So we've got one person moving
going out of IT.
Into a truck driver and the other one going the other direction. We've got that response. And something that's a little bit more informative, let me find the response here in my email. I think I may have lost. Ah, here we go. This one's from Mark. He says, hi, guys. I heard that one of your listeners was looking for a way to use his mobile broadband card with Linux. I had the same issue recently and found a tiny, almost hidden link on the Sprint site for using their mobile broadband cards with Linux. I wouldn't have found it without the good folks in the Ubuntu forums. I have attached the actual instructions as they seem like they're pretty generic. The program to use under Linux is one by the name of KPPP, which is available in add and remove programs in the menus. And just an aside from me, it's also available in the package manager as well. Back to Mark's email, he wraps up saying, I got my Sprint mobile card working in just 10 minutes. And it works great. In fact, it works better than it did in Windows. Linux actually sleeps the card in between uses. That is, accessing a website, checking email, etc., which definitely saves batteries. And if you're interested, I can provide the PDF that Mark provided us off the Sprint site for your show notes.
We can get a link. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. We'll put all that in our show notes tonight. That would be fantastic.
Also, after the break, we got a question about. I have a question actually about fonts and
sure.
Pixel smoothing. I guess like ClearType would be the Windows parallel to that.
Right.
This is the Computer America Show. We'll be right back. It's all Linux tonight. Stay with us.
Computer America, the official computer radio talk show of CompUSA.
And don't you forget it, 866-606-TALK, the toll-free number, live at computeramerica.com, the email address, or our chat room at computeramerica.com. All of this entire show is dedicated tonight to this topic of Linux. Larry Bushy joins us, the creator and host of the Going Linux podcast. And Larry, in the Computer America chat room, got involved with one of our listeners and users, Citizen X, goes by the handle. She was talking about the fact that she didn't like the way some of the fonts look, and she's going to use the Microsoft fonts. And that kind of rang a little bell, and I said, well, wait a minute. I said, there's got to be some parallel in Linux to Windows. For example, in Windows, they have something called ClearType, which you can activate. It makes the font look smoother, reduces some of the pixelation. On the Mac, we have something called Font Smoothing Style. There's different versions. There's Light, Standard, Automatic. It's optimized for flat panel. You can turn off text smoothing for different font sizes. So obviously, it's all there. And I thought perhaps might be some corollary in the world of Linux. And evidently, there is.
Yes.
And evidently even more so than a Linux, because I think Linux just has clear type. You turn that on or off. Linux offers a variety of font smoothing options, does it not?
Yes, it does. And depending on what the desktop environment is you're using, it will be in a different place in each desktop. So it might be in a different place under the GNOME desktop environment versus the KDE desktop environment versus something else. But the settings are there. And let me just, for the KDE users, and I know Citizen X is using GNOME under Ubuntu, but I don't have my GNOME system up.
Yeah, I see Addison in there says that they have a thing called a best shape, best contrast, subpixel smoothing. These are some of the rendering options that are offered. And I'm not sure what version that is, though, but...
Yeah, that would probably be under GNOME, and for KDE, which is the desktop environment that is preferred by the techie people because it has many, many more of these kinds of fiddly little things you can tweak, where you would go there is KDE has a K menu, very much like Windows Start menu, except instead of having all the programs organized by vendor or by program name like it was in Windows XP, it's organized by application type. In there, you'll see something called System Settings, and if you go in there, there's a General and Advanced tab. Under the General tab, there's something under Look and Feel called Appearance. If you go in there, there are several places where you can adjust things like colors, icons, the style of a window, the window decoration. That would be the border and the header and the buttons and all that stuff. And at the very top, near the very top, there's fonts, which gives you one set of settings for adjusting fonts, where you can choose to use anti-aliasing. You can enable or disable that. You can force the fonts to be a certain DPI for your computer, dots per inch, or you can have it automatically selected. And then under KDE, you have something else called GTK styles and fonts. GTK is one of the programming utilities that's used for developing the environment itself. And so there are some other settings in there as well. So there are plenty of places to make these adjustments. And again, it's a matter of experience. It's a matter of getting used to a whole different world. And as I think I said in last month's Linux episode of Computer America, you need to change your mindset a little bit and stop thinking in terms of Windows and how I know how to do it in Windows. How do I translate that into Linux? Much like learning a new language, you almost have to get immersed in it and get yourself in there and say, if I didn't know anything about computers, where would I look? And from that perspective, just looking at the menu, for example, the K menu versus the Start menu, it is much more intuitive because it's laid out by application type. So instead of saying Microsoft and AVG and the various vendors, the categories you have in the K menu are things like games, graphics, internet, multimedia, office, settings, system, utilities, things that actually mean something, and then you go and find the application under those. I think Vista has taken that approach a little more, so maybe Microsoft is catching up.
Carrie, as the Windows expert here in the group, I mean, is ClearType the only thing that XP offered to make the fonts, you know, more legible?
A lot of people don't like the ClearType. They don't like the effect it has. It almost makes the letters look a bit blurry or thicker.
Fuzzy, yeah.
You can change the font. You can change the font size, the font style on the desktop to anything that you prefer to accommodate. You know, the people run into these, like I've got a couple of 22-inch widescreen LCDs, and I've got them cranked up to, what's my resolution on here? Let me see. The resolution I've got it set to currently
native
is 1680 by 1050.
That's a native for that panel?
So, I don't know. It's just the highest my video card will output, and it looks really nice on this panel, so that's what I've kept it at. So two panels, both set at 1650 by 1680 by 1050 pixels. Now, to give you some perspective, now most users will have 1024 by 768. Mm. So this isn't quite twice that, but it's more than that and a half. Mm-hmm. And as a result, the font can be very small and detailed, but I also have a lot more desktop space to work with. But if I wanted to, I could go into my desktop settings and make the fonts larger so they're more legible decrease my desktop graphics. A lot of users do that. They go, well, just drop to 800 by 600 and end up with these giant icons and giant text.
There's another point I want to – don't have time to make it here, but let me make it when we come back about how fonts appear on the screen. This is Computer America. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Computer America Show on the Business Talk Radio Network and the Lifestyle Talk Radio Network. 866-606-TALK, the toll-free number, live at computeramerica.com, the email address, or our chat room at computeramerica.com. It's 34 minutes into the hour. We're talking to Larry Bushy. It's all Linux tonight. And a comment was made in the chat room about font appearances. And we're talking about how that looks. I know on a Mac, which is my area of expertise, is that I remember – before OS X came out, what fonts used to look like on a computer screen, and it was not a pretty picture. But I was used to it with the little lines. When OS X came about on the Mac, it was like the curtains had parted, and I could see clearly because the fonts, no matter how big or how small or what style or whatever it is, the font engine embedded into OS X makes them look like they're literally painted on the screen. I mean, they are gorgeous to look at. It looks like something you would see, you know, if it was done on a printing press. I mean, there's no pixelation. They're always smooth. They're easy to read. And so I guess that's what I was referring to when the topic of how fonts appear in the Linux environment, because although there are some tweaks on the Mac, basically it's the operating system is doing most of the work. I mean, you can elect to turn something on or turn it off, or designate the lowest font size before it stops the OS X stops, you know, manipulating the font. But basically, it's across the board. Once you do that, no matter what the application is, no matter what you're doing, those fonts look, you know, beautiful in appearance. Right. You know, so that's I guess that's the point that I was trying to make when this all came up with the comment about fonts and all the different tweaks and everything that you can do in Linux. And I'm not talking again about font sizes and font styles or anything, but I'm just how they're actually generated. It seems to me that Linux offers more ability to be able to do that or turn that on, these anti-aliasing abilities and whatever else you might want to call them, smooth typing. That's offered in the Windows environment, and my question is: first of all, is that a good thing? I mean, sometimes too many tweaks can spoil the soup. You know.
That gets back to the comment earlier that Linux gets in its own way sometimes in terms of fostering adoption. And you know, if you're the kind of person who likes to have full control over things like that, then you can choose a desktop environment like KDE that gives you all of those tweaks and adjustments. In fact, if you're the kind of user that the first thing you do with a brand new computer is install Tweak UI on Windows, then you would love KDE as your desktop environment. On the other hand, if you're the kind of person who wants to have everything set up for you out of the box and you just want to be able to use it and have it reasonable, and if you want to make some minor adjustments, you can do it, then you want to choose something like GNOME. And in particular, my personal favorite for a GNOME environment is Ubuntu, and you hear me talk about it a lot, primarily because it's one of the ones that adjusts itself nicely to the new user. They really do a good job. They keep the settings reasonable, so that you can tweak the things that most people would want to tweak. They hide those things that are more the geeky, techie kinds of tweaks, but you still have the ability to change them if you are geeky and techie. You can still get in there and tweak them. You just need to know how to do that. And if you're a geek, you'll figure it out.
Sure. Oh, there you go. So a little something for everybody.
Yes.
Okay. Well, there you go. With Windows, you mentioned an application. That's actually a third-party utility, then. That's not part of the native Windows environment, then.
Tweak UI?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's an unsupported free download from Microsoft.
Ah, okay. All right. Well, there it is. At least it comes from the same company that makes the operating system.
Yes.
So that's it. Let's say something. All right, we're going to break just for 60 seconds, and then we'll continue on. It's all Linux all night long, or at least as far as we're on the show. This is Computer America, 866-606-TALK, live at ComputerAmerica.com or the chat room at ComputerAmerica.com. 60 seconds, and we will be right back.
And we're back with the Computer America Show. We are live on the Business and Lifestyle Talk Radio Networks, broadcasting coast to coast and around the world through the web at ComputerAmerica.com. Our guest this hour, Larry Bushy. He's the creator and host of the Going Linux podcast. This is the third Tuesday of the month dedicated to Linux, as is every third Tuesday of the month here at Computer America. Larry, is there any limitation to hard drive size with the Linux operating system? I know with Windows, it's the FAT32 and the NTFS, and they each have their own limitations with regards to how big of a hard drive you can put in. What's the deal with Linux, and what's the file system options in Linux?
Well, first, the answer to your first question is I'm not aware that there is any limitation on hard drive size, as there was in the original FAT file systems from the DOS days and in current Windows operating systems. In Linux, you have a number of choices for file system formats. They have names like EXT2, EXT3, Riser. Yes, that is the same Riser that's been in the news for murdering his wife. He was the developer of a Linux file system called the Riser file system.
That's not a joke. I thought that was a joke.
No, not at all. It's not a joke. Very serious. And there are a number of others out there as well. Some of them are better for, they're designed for different things, and EXT2 and EXT3, for example, EXT3 is the next generation of EXT2, and so has some better file handling within the file system itself than EXT2 would have. Systems like Riser are what's known as journaling file systems, and what they do is they enable recovery a little bit better if something goes wrong on your hard drive. It actually keeps a record of what's been going on in the file system, keeps kind of an audit trail, if you will. I don't know all of the technical details, but it has its pluses and minuses as well, although it can get you out of some jams if your hard drive goes south. It can also cause some problems on recovery as well. So depending on which operating or which distribution of Linux that you choose, they typically give you a choice of which file system that you can install. But for the most part, just my recommendation is just go with whatever comes with that particular distribution. They've tested it with that file system, and it works the best.
Like when you install Windows, you have to choose.
Yes.
Linux, you don't choose. It's just whatever the operating system, it designates its own.
You can choose. In fact, when you install Linux for the first time, you generally have two different ways that you can install it. You can have a guided installation, or you can have, I forget what they call it, but it's essentially a manual installation, where the guided installation, you have a wizard that walks you through questions like, do you want to replace Windows on this hard drive with Linux, or do you want to dual boot? And the manual installation, you would drop into a partitioner and then be able to create, resize the Windows partition so to make room for the Linux partition, and then you're asked where do you want to put Linux, how big a partition do you want it on, do you want the home directory in the same place as the system files, and all of those kinds of things. For the new user, just follow the wizard.
Just go through the wizard and answer the questions on the screen, and before you know it, you have exactly. The beginnings of your operating system. Then you have to find your applications. Now, other listener questions that you can share with us?
Sure. In our last episode, we had listener questions, and this one came out of that episode, and it is a listener who has a question about episode 35 of the Going Linux podcast. I have to explain right up front that episode 35 was where Tom and I discussed various replacements in Linux for iTunes. And the reason we got onto that topic is because we realized that between 30 and 40% of the listeners of the Going Linux podcast listen on iTunes. And so they're either running Mac or Windows. And we've gotten several emails from listeners saying, I have switched over to Linux, except that I have dual booted or I have my second computer running Windows just so that I can listen to your podcast using iTunes. What can I do in Linux to switch over? And this is a typical email here from Steve. Steve is actually from Bristol in the UK. We have a lot of international listeners. And he says, hi, chaps. Many thanks for a really interesting podcast. I've been dabbling with Linux for 8 years, anything but a newbie in his case, and I'm in the process of migrating my Windows PCs. I've recently migrated my Windows Media Center over to Myth TV, the Mythbuntu distribution. And just an aside at this point, Mythbuntu is a Linux Media Center distribution. It competes head-to-head with the Media Center edition of Windows. And he goes on to say, in the process of migrating from Vista to Ubuntu on my HP Pavilion laptop, the one issue I'm having is with podcasts. I currently use iTunes to manage the podcasts, and this handles the process very nicely, although it's painfully slow. I have a 5-gigabyte iPod that I use purely for listening to podcasts. I have a smart playlist set up within iTunes that queues up any unplayed podcasts. I find this useful as I cycle to and from work and can't easily access my iPod while on the move. So I start playing the smart playlist, and off I go, all podcasts queued up and ready to go. I like to do the same under Linux, but I'm struggling, he says. He goes on a little bit further and discusses a few other things, but that's the gist of his email. Now, if I can just have a minute here to go to my response here. Before I do that, let me back up a second. And in the episode, the Linux versions of iTunes, I hate to say that, but for those people who are used to iTunes and want to be able to use something on Linux that works in a very similar way, in fact, they may have an iPod and they want to be able to hook it into their Linux machine. There are, as with anything else in Linux, a number of different options. If the only media player you have is an iPod, there's something called BashPodder, which is a dedicated podcast receiver. It doesn't play the podcasts. It's not a media player. It just downloads them, allows you to subscribe to them and download them. In Linux, you also have a number of software media players, things like VLC, which is a cross-platform media player that works on Windows and Linux. It might even work on the Mac, for all I know. There's MPlayer and other media players as well. And there's a software application called GTK Pod that loads podcasts onto your iPod. It doesn't play them. It doesn't subscribe to them. It just loads them onto the iPod. So there are a number of components that if you wanted a best-of-breed solution to be able to do that, you could use that configuration. But what I've recommended is one of several other combination media players, much like iTunes is a media player that would be classified as a combination. It allows you to play media. It allows you to subscribe to a podcast, to download the podcast, to move them over into your iPod. There are software programs called Songbird, which is derived from the Mozilla browser, much like Firefox is a derivative of the Mozilla browser. Songbird allows you to use it as a media player and subscribe and move music over to iPods, music and podcasts. But the one that I recommend to most people is something called Amarok, and it's spelled A-M-A-R-O-K. And after the break, I'll describe why.
All right. And we'll be on the edge of our seats until you do. This is the Computer America Show on the Business Talk Radio Network and the Lifestyle Talk Radio Network. 866-606-TALK, the toll-free number, live at ComputerAmerica.com or the chat room at ComputerAmerica.com. One last final segment coming up. We'll be right back. Stay tuned. This is the Computer America Show on the Business Talk Radio Network and the Lifestyle Talk Radio Network. The entire show, we've been having a wonderful, pleasant conversation with Larry Bushy, who is the creator and host of the Going Linux podcast. And Larry, you make it really easy to understand all the things with Linux. You know, you ought to start your own podcast or something. And
I should.
Yeah, you
I really should.
Really, yeah. Because you have a really you have a good knack for it, you know.
Oh well, so. I appreciate that. Maybe I'll do that.
Yeah, I'll start a radio talk show one of these days too. Yeah, exactly.
Okay, good.
There you go. I think we have our goals now. So in this last segment, where do you want to?
I was talking about an Adirondack chair.
Yes, exactly. Yes,
exactly. Amarok. Yes, it's the it's the same word as, you know, the hardware for your cabinets at home. There's a brand called Amarok. It's spelled the same way. Amarok is a media player. And we were talking before the break about, we were discussing an email we got about how to switch from Windows iTunes and make the conversion over into Linux. And the media player that I recommend to those people who like iTunes, and not everybody likes iTunes, but for those who do, the recommendation I make is Amarok. It comes on Kubuntu, which is the KDE version of Ubuntu. It comes in many other distributions as well. On Ubuntu, they have chosen a different media player, but it's easy to install if you don't already have it. You just go to your package manager, search for Amarok, A-M-A-R-O-K, and install it. Of course, it's free. It's from Linux. And in there, you can subscribe to a podcast. There's a little podcast section on the left-hand side. There are radio streams already programmed in there. You have smart playlists, just like you do on iTunes. You have playlists you can create. You have dynamic playlists that change based on your listening habits. When you subscribe to podcasts, you can create folders for them and file them right there in Amarok. They download them. You can control the downloads per podcast. So if there's a weekly podcast, you can set it so that it goes and looks for that podcast every week. If it's a daily podcast, you can have it look for it every day. That way you're not wasting bed with searching for things every day when the podcast isn't published every day. So there's a lot of control there. You can also subscribe to Last FM, the FM radio station over the radio stations over the internet, right there from Amarok. Of course, it plays media formats including MP3 and OGG. OGG is the free media format, and it's just a really flexible system for subscribing to podcasts, playing media, and moving the media over to your iPod. Plug your iPod in, syncs right up.
Hey, Larry, thanks again so much for being with us.
The show has just zipped on by.
Yes, it did.
Yeah.
Where did it go?
I'll tell you what, Larry, send me some links to what we talked about tonight.
I will.
And I'll be sure to add those to our show notes. I want to thank you again for joining us here tonight. Just a reminder for our listeners, the Computer America Archive site is up, computeramericaarchives.com, brought to you by GoDaddy. And if you visit that, we're adding 2006 and 2008 to the shows, so you can go back and find
all
those
right.
old shows that have been in our vault for the collecting dust.
I saw
so
that.
Check it out.
Yeah, Panda Security going to join us in Wednesday Madness because that's the only time they could be there. So that's where
yeah, we mix it up a little bit, you know.
There you go. So that's
just when you think you got to figure it out, we change it on you.
You got it. Hey, thanks again, Larry. And so until tomorrow night, this is Craig Crossman, hoping that your hard disk never becomes floppy. See ya.
Good night, everyone.
The opinions you hear on the Business Talk Radio Network are those of the hosts, callers, and guests, and not necessarily those of this station, Business Talk Radio Network, its management, or advertisers. The information on the Business Talk Radio Network does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. Investing involves risks. Please consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions or comments about the Business Talk Radio Network, contact us at 203-323-7300 or at our website, businesstalkradio.net.
Theme music provided by Mark Blasco at podcastthemes.com.